when you never thought you'd be so happy to see your old pals, the referees. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Nick, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a 3-day swing to Boston, but was unfortunately unable to darken the door of Gillette. That'll happen. That'll happen soon.
Unable to darken the door of Gillette. Love that.
But it's been good. We've got a couple of match days of this season in, and there's been some interesting developments and some pretty good soccer.
Yeah. All of a sudden we're a few games deep into it, and you know, I was gonna say the table's starting to take shape, but that's, I feel like, just sort of an always true statement that has no actual information in it. It has been interesting to watch over the first, what have we had, sort of 5 or 6 games so far, to see where teams are ending up in the table at this early point.
When is the jump to conclusions? When does the jump to conclusions exclusion window end? Is that in the MLS regulations?
I don't know if those guidelines have been updated, but if you're Taylor Twellman, I feel like it's never too early to make a season end prediction. But I mean, I guess, as an entry point to the games that have happened, I mean, we can talk about some teams specifically and some results, but for you, just out of the first few game weeks, is there a team or two, maybe one from each conference or however you want to divide it, a team or two that for you has surprised you and is higher up in the table at this point than you thought they might be?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is, as a Vancouver Whitecaps fan, you've got to be happy with what's happened, especially given the fact that Coach Vinny Sartini has been serving, and now I believe after a shortening has served his complete.
Yeah, that's right.
His complete suspension for the comments made at the end of the last season, and if you look at 2-1-1, that's 2-1-1 out of those 5 games, and the way that the team has played, that's pretty good.
It's good enough for a third place start in the Western Conference.
That's right. I've got to be happy with that. I think that when you look at the two tables, the one that really has got to be a surprise is Minnesota. Minnesota is undefeated. They got a big 2-goal win in not the most recent match day because of the weird stuff that's going on with bye weeks.
Yeah.
I'm not used to there being clubs having a bye and some clubs not being in every week. But the last time Minnesota were around, which makes it even wilder because they have a game in hand. The last time Minnesota were around, they got the 2-0 win at home over LA, which is definitely, you know, LA is in 6th this season, and they've been sort of 6-1, half dozen of the other at times.
And lest our listeners get confused, we do mean LAFC in 6th, because LA Galaxy is LA perhaps Galaxy, surprisingly, sitting in 2nd.
That's how do you feel about LA Galaxy being in 2nd?
How do I feel about it?
Yes.
I believe we talked at the end of last season and the beginning of this one about, like, if teams that have been not so great over the last couple of seasons, but traditionally, historically have been quite good, start to outperform, some teams could be in trouble. That top 9 to get playoff spots could look a little different. And LA Galaxy, of course, is one of those teams that have just had a real miserable couple of years and have had a very respectable start to the season with 2 wins and 3 ties, 0 losses so far. I don't feel great about it because it just means that things are that much harder for Vancouver to squeak into the what I'm assuming will be another late finish trying to get the final playoff spot to make it into the playoffs at the end of the season. But it's really hard to look at the galaxy right now and not feel at least a little bit good for the galaxy diehard that have been through some stuff. And
this just speaks to our MLS trauma, because we're talking about LA and Vancouver, and to a certain and to an extension also Minnesota, as like as though they're going to like squeak into the playoffs when those because that in past seasons that's not an unreasonable.
Yeah.
You know, 7, 8, 9, 8, 9, 10, but it's 1, 2 spread in the conference, but it's 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? Many different things can happen, as we've already seen. I think if there's anything that defines the Western Conference right now, it's the teams that had not such a great start in previous seasons have started really well. The teams that have maybe started better are not starting as well. But for Greg Vanney's project in Galaxy, you're really starting to see it kind of come together. All of the players that have needed to step up in the absence of Chicharito, and with you know, many sort of big names underperforming, but big names departing Galaxy, I think they've finally found a nice balance of players where they've got some star power and they're happy to let Puig pull the strings. Jovovich has stepped up and picked up where he left off and has proven himself a worthy starting striker for them. They've got a mix of young and old. It's hard not to just objectively like what the product that the Galaxy are putting out right now.
You look at the they had their match in the last match week against Sporting Kansas City, in which they received roughly, I would say, 25 offside calls. 25 offside
change.
Goals. They ran like the same play with Ricky Puig and Jovic and on like 3 separate occasions, and they got it was called offside 3 times. And the first time, it's like, oh my god, they've tore apart the defense. Then you see the replay, and it's like, oh, because it was.
Well, offside.
Mondo offside. And it's like, the funny part is on the goal that they did score, it wasn't necessarily like a situation of like they approached the play any differently. It's just that they were on the break. It's like stretching the opposing team's back line, not so that you have channels to go through, but just so you don't put yourself offside.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the idea, I've been told. Yeah, I think so. Western Conference, I think those things stand out to me. Red Bulls in the Eastern Conference having a very good start. They hammered Inter Miami the other week in the pouring rain. Got a 4-0 win over them.
Lewis Morgan,
former Inter Miami man, does the damage on the other side. At first, I was like, I feel like the Red Bulls should be celebrating these goals way more against Inter Miami. And then I was like, Oh, right. The guy scoring 3 of them. It's his old team.
That's kind of him.
It's very, very kind of him. A question I've been dying to ask you is.
Yes.
Two teams that I think we have to talk about at least a little bit. Toronto and Montreal, how do you rate the start to their seasons so far?
Well, obviously Toronto have been finding it's the continuing thing with Toronto has been you know, they have their two massively expensive players up top. But they also, over the course of the last so far in this season and in last season, have been working to develop, you know, players like DeAndre Kerr and other people who can, you know, step into that position, which to me is more important for like the long-term health of the club, because those are the you know, I think we consistently think about how long is this going to last with Insigne. Insigne is up with a hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
After that match against Atlanta, which they won 2-0. If we can see, obviously, I think that things have been It seems as though there's been a brighter start. You know, a draw against Cincinnati, who's at the top of the conference, is good. A bunch of 1-0s is good. They lost away at New York. That's, you know, that will happen. But if you look at the way that the team played,
yeah, it will happen.
Although I guess teams are finding it a little bit easier at Yankee Stadium than in past years. Like you say, sometimes clubs that you think you're used to being good are not having the biggest impact. But you had the goals from Prince Owusu and Tyrese Spicer, and that was interesting. That was good to see. But it's hard not to look at it and to think that they're still trying to make it work with those two players up top, Insigne and Bernadeschi, and they are not the future of the team. Even if you are on your rosiest.
Yeah. Well, and I think one thing I'll say for Toronto right now is that the Herdman era of just a much more structurally organized team is upon us. However the pieces move around, whoever's in or out, one thing I've seen from TFC so far this season is just a much more organized midfield and just overall organization from back to front. That defensively, they are tied for best right now with Cincinnati in the league with only 2 goals conceded. Of course, the offensive parts, as you say, like having more players contributing to the attack, Bernadeschi involved, Insigne when he's better in, I think, like 6 weeks or something. I think the thing that's impressed me the most is not necessarily the players performing that should have been performing this whole time. It's the overall team as a unit and the organization that's happening, is that they look as organized a side as is being played in MLS right now. And I think of teams like Columbus, where regardless of what's happening in a game, and Columbus certainly has their own moments where things get a little clusterfucky, but for the most part, but then they return to their shape, they return to their structure. You can see it exactly how the team is expected to organize themselves on the pitch. And just a much better marking system going on overall. So that, for me, is kind of the thing to watch. If TFC can stick to that, there's absolutely no reason why they don't make the playoffs. A deep run, I think it's way too early to say, and there's just not enough data in yet. But this TFC side playing, you know, overall pretty good organized soccer, yeah, I feel like they're at least good for 8th or 9th.
And that's a massive improvement. We also can say that's like, a massive from where things were and how people were feeling about the club. That's a big change.
Hell yes. You know, it's not all going to be bottom to the top in terms of turnarounds. But I think TFC fans, that's got to be a minimum of like, let's at least make it back into the playoffs and remind people that this is a club that can compete and can pose a serious threat to some good clubs, which they've already done too. This isn't 5 games they've played against struggling teams in MLS. And again, as you say, the City result notwithstanding, they've gone toe to toe with really good sides in MLS, neither drawn or won. So that bodes well.
How do you feel about Montreal?
I think somewhat similarly, they're okay. They're just behind Toronto in 6th place. The big difference here is that Montreal has been scoring more goals. Their attack has looked, I think, more potent than it did last season. But the defensive side of things hasn't been great either. So I think Montreal, for me, is a little bit more of a wild card where I don't see enough yet to really have a good sense of, is this a playoff contention team where they may be lurking closer to the bottom. But I kind of see it, you know, like I admittedly have not seen a ton of them play beyond the highlights. So I also just feel like for my own self, I don't have enough to really go on.
I definitely feel that too, because I was like, I feel like I tried to catch their opening week game when they were at the 0-0 draw. And now I go back over the schedule and it's like, 4-3 thrillers against, you know, against Chicago. And
I mean, the Chicago one was definitely wild. the Windy City delivering some spectacular hope to Chicago fans in that one.
So they were down a bunch. That was like a 3-1 at the 80th minute.
Yeah.
Chicago scored three times before the end of stoppage time. Is that right?
That's the one. So I guess in fairness, there's 7 goals against. 4 of those were in Chicago, which isn't good. But every single team in MLS is going to have at least one match like this that is just really a woof underscored. At least one, usually a couple of them. So I think, again, maybe that's an outlier. You don't want to be beaten by the wind too many times.
They picked up the win against Miami, which I feel like that's going to be... That's going to be one of those when you look at... when you look back at them at the end of the year, it's like if you were able to get a good week or a bad week,
yeah,
as it were, against Miami, that you were in that you got off lucky, or not even got off lucky, that you've done well. This past week for Miami, they played at Atlanta, and they had they were missing Messi and Callender, and I almost thought that was Callender the bigger problem. And in terms of the being as instrumental or as much of a problem as in their 4-0 loss that they had this past week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Inter Miami is always an interesting one. I know people have talked about the fact that they play a very high line, and because they're so attack-minded, I think that that's probably the right approach to play. Like, why not throw as many players forward as possible to try to feed the ball to your star players when you have the star players that you do? But it certainly leaves you vulnerable at moments, and that's what Red Bulls were able to exploit is just running in behind. But I agree. I mean, Drake Callender has proven himself to be one of the best goalkeepers in MLS over the last couple of seasons, and not having him, I think that maybe he gets his hand on a couple of those, but ultimately I think they probably still lose. Just bucketing rain in that one too, which I don't think can be an excuse for Miami, because they're of course no strangers to rain, but just absolute buckets.
Right. Oh, I said Atlanta. That was the New York game with Lewis Morgan. Massive Lewis Morgan success. I don't know what. Yeah, it's been that weather system has been felt here as well in the Maritimes in terms of lots. I think we're getting it right now.
Sweet Inter Miami rain.
The thoughts that I have with that. I know I've had that whenever this comes up and you hear quotes from Tata Martino about like, you know, MLS needs to fix playing during international breaks. I kind of have like a 50-50 feeling on it, which is that like in my brain, I think fixture congestion is it doesn't make sense from a brand perspective to be expecting your clubs to be going out there with, you know, less than their top level talent when you're talking about your league games. From a player safety perspective, MLS really needs to reduce some games or add to the squad sizes. That was a big part of Open Cup. So I can't I look at it and I think that like they absolutely need the current roster situation does not work for the idea that you're just going to keep playing during international break, and if teams are missing players, then teams are missing players. Mm-hmm. But also, in the MLS era of some teams being able to attract and somehow pay mondo expensive players.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the one leveler. This is the one leveler, is that sometimes you don't get to have Luis Suarez.
Yeah.
And he was playing that game.
Most of their stars were, except for Messi. And their goalkeeper, Callender.
Right.
Who I think that also shows his influence on that team, that as much as they talk about the outfield strength, Callender is a huge reason for Inter Miami's success as well.
That's right. So I'm kind of like 50-50. My other feeling about Miami is that, like, I understand the decision of why you go after Messi and what he brings to the league. And I think that a lot of those arguments apply as well to Luis Suarez. But damn, does adding him to that situation is so much more unfair. Like it's like you look at the league last year and it's like, oh, you failed to succeed with one massively talented international star. How about somebody who is, you know, at the top of the scoring charts in the Brazilian league?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. However, as we saw, it's not always enough.
Arms race, though. Have you heard about the newest stage in the arms race?
I think I have, and I'm assuming you're not referring to Inter Miami signing Maxime Cheneau, former New York City center back. I just wanted to throw that in while we were talking about Inter Miami, that we were seeing we always like a familiar face back in MLS. I can't remember where he's been for the last bit, but he will be coming back to hold some of the back line for Inter Miami, and that's definitely been a weak point for them. I think they've had good defenders. They've obviously been shuffling things around, but in center back positioning in particular, just prone to getting caught out. And Maxime Cheneau, as we know, is a very competent defender.
It's LAFC's newest legend.
Mm-hmm.
Kai Kamara. Wait, no, that's not who I meant, but Kai Kamara is a legend, and he is training with them. So fingers crossed that the 40-year-old gets a deal. But it's Olivier Giroud is in talks, as per The Athletic.
And I can actually confirm that I just looked it up because I didn't know he was training with LAFC. He has officially signed as of a couple of hours ago.
Hey, that's great news. I love to hear that. So, yeah, okay, Olivier Giroud, come if you want. Come if you want. I don't care. Kai Kamara's got his deal.
Yeah.
That's what I care about.
That's excellent. LAFC. We'll be seeing him back at BC Place at some point, I'm sure.
That's true. That's right, because we didn't, I think there might have been a crossover. I think there was at least one game since he left that
but he has been mostly on Eastern Conference teams, so.
Well, like I said, we're big Kai guys here.
Big Kai guys here. Yeah, LAFC, obviously they've not had the most electric start to the season. It's not been bad, but it's not exactly been great either. They were also able to lock in Denny Bouanga, which kind of feels like a no-brainer, but wasn't always a sure thing. Giroud in the summer, sure. I feel very 50-50 on whether, like, does he come in and score 10 goals in half a season? Sure, I think he's capable of that. Does he win you MLS Cup? I don't know. I haven't been following him enough, but I think there's a very big difference between a Suarez and a Messi at that stage of their career and a Giroud, but I could be ignorant here. I've eaten my words before.
The one thing I wanted to mention, I was talking about Messi being gone as though it's part of the international break. He does have a hamstring injury, which is a part of that discussion. Yeah, I don't know that about Giroud because I did not support his English club team, nor did I.
Contractually obligated to ignore him.
nor am I an AC Milan supporter, so. So I can't speak to whether or not this is career twilight situation is like, but he's got 12 goals and 8 assists in Italy. So there is that is definitely not anything to sneeze at. And I do also think that, there has been, LA has picked up good recently.
Sure. And like, I'm not necessarily saying this is the combo, but like Kai Kamara and Olivier Giroud up top could fuck some teams up. Those are two big, strong strikers. I don't imagine them necessarily playing in a two-striker system a lot, but it's a lot with Bwanga supporting. Like, yeah, that'll work.
And according to the article from Tom Bogert, they still have a DP spot open for Vela if that situation changes in any way.
I believe that situation has closed, has it not? I thought they confirmed. I mean, they would still have a DP spot.
That was this is the MLS brain that I have that I'm piecing through this interview about I'm piecing through this story about France's top scorer to see, well, what does this mean for Carlos Vela? But and it didn't have a lot, but there was the suggestion. Where was it? I thought I saw. Oh, and they have his discovery rights, so that's great. It's great that nobody can claim to. Nobody can claim to have discovered him other than LAFC. We love that. The line in the Athletic story from Bogert and Jeff Reuter is. LAFC still has another DP spot to play with. Vela is still a free agent. Let's see if anything else changes before the end of the summer transfer window.
I see. Okay. And I think that's fair to say.
So less that, like, those conversations, if you had heard that they've, you know, bid him farewell, then that would be less like those conversations are currently happening than, past a certain point, they may find each other the only eligible partners for each other, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think my main point was just confirming that Carlos Vela is not currently an LAFC player. He's a free agent.
That's right. He's a free agent.
Because I know there was some conversation before about, like, will he, won't he? He was still, his contract was running out, but they might bring him back. That is done. I find it hard to believe that, you know, there's a future for him. But, of course, like, give it a few months to see where LAFC is at, see where Carlos Vela is at. It's certainly possible. I would imagine that LAFC's top brass is trying to think long term and doesn't feel a huge amount of pressure to rush into anything. And so that could mean, you know, a signing for a free agent Vela for half a season. If it comes to fruition, but obviously having that DP spot open and available means they could still find a really interesting piece. Giroud, if they're able to lock him in, to me, would definitely seal Vela's fate as out. You don't need them both. Vela, of course, can play out on the wing and does, but I think you want to go with something maybe a little bit younger, but I don't know.
It's again comes down to this idea of MLS teams now needing, and I feel like this is partially the reason why Insigne and Bernadeschi are still at Toronto and they haven't pushed, is because there is an arms race happening. It just so happens, it hasn't worked out great already for Toronto, but it does happen for them that they happen to have, you know, the equipment in the shed already.
Mm-hmm.
But top clubs are now looking for the next tier up of want-away European stars.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily a Jordan Shaqiri or a Bastian Schweinsteiger who are, you know, good, but also and have a lot to contribute to your locker room and can also contribute a lot on the pitch, but aren't necessarily like firing at their, you know, at their career peaks, versus somebody that was operating at a pretty high level immediately before they got signed.
Yeah. And I think the positioning matters as well. Like, if you're going to spend that extra amount of money to bring in a higher caliber, older player, they really do, at the very least, they need to be an attacking winger, it seems. Inter Miami notwithstanding, who just because of Messi and his own personal relationships as much as his reputation can attract better players at lower prices in different positions. I think what we're seeing, to me at least, it seems like if a team's willing to do that, bring in that higher caliber European want away, they're going to be a striker and they're going to play as a striker.
We're gonna have to have like property tax assessments for players where it's like, well, this player is on a $100,000 a year contract, but we assess him at $1.5 million.
Yeah. Speaking of property value investments, I feel like it's important for us to talk about Portland, a team that we have maligned somewhat over the last little bit. To me, and I think others, a somewhat surprising start, not necessarily a tear away, but how do you rate the Phil Neville era at Portland Timbers?
Well, I don't really think that anybody was... I mean, I definitely would agree that there was a certain amount in my brain of write-off when it came to Portland. I still haven't seen too much of them, but obviously they've got 7 points from their opening matches. They were able to get, you know, big road win in New York again. As I mentioned, you could kind of get it. They had the massive win on the first week of the season, which was great for them. I do kind of feel like I feel like I want to watch more games, and I feel like I want to. We need to get out of the jump to conclusion zone a little bit with them, but yeah. They've had some success. They've had players scoring goals. They've had Antony with 3 goals.
Mm-hmm.
So those are good signs. They had some stumbles in the last couple of matches. Those are less good signs, but I understand they're also looking to make a signing of a player called Cabecita.
Mm.
So that could be a help for them. For on the field and off the field reasons, the bloom is off the rose for me with Portland. So if they get better, I mean, that's cool. But we'll have to see when that.
You sound real excited about it.
We'll have to see when that situation, how that situation evolves, and you know, that was the 1-0 loss to Houston in the last match of the week, and then 3-1 loss to Philadelphia. Playing at home.
Last Timbers question. Is it more painful or less painful to see Maxime Crépeau in a Portland shirt versus an LAFC one?
More painful.
Yeah.
Great. There's no doubt about it.
Moving on.
That's Vancouver, and we get to see them next. Fuck. We get to see them tomorrow.
No.
As we speak.
No.
Do you think Crépeau is going to play NBC Plus?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
I think you have to be insane not to. Why not? Crépeau has proven himself to be more than capable of milking a situation to work in his favor. And credit to him. Like, why not? If you can help your team win and play the villain, I suspect he'll be starting in that one.
I just remember Sam Adekubi going up to him and being like, I just played with you in the national team. You're not an asshole.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah.
It was Jonathan Cabecita Rodriguez from Club America is they're in talks on a deal with that individual. So that will help bolster. Mm. I feel like that's also a part of the MLS jump to conclusions exclusion window that I'm now writing into the club rules.
Yeah.
Is part of it is that people aren't close to done doing signings.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
true.
It's like you could kind of say like, oh, Portland, you know, you could talk a lot about whether or not Portland does or doesn't have it, but they're also, if they end up, you know, acquiring a piece that ends up being their jewel piece for the rest of it, well, that's challenging to, then that feels a little bit out of the window.
That's fair. Given that, maybe you've just answered the question, but do you feel like there's any teams that you've seen so far in either conference that you're like, I don't know that you can save this at this point. Like, this season just might be a wash. And not like, obviously it's very hard to tell, but just first blush teams that you're like, I don't know, guys, I don't think you got it this season.
Money cures all wounds. There's no doubt about
it. Sure does in MLS. Those Garber bucks will take you far.
But this Seattle San Jose match at the bottom of the table last week, at the bottom of the Western Conference, where, you know, Raul Ruiz Diaz becomes the Seattle leading goal scorer, and then they lose the match.
Yeah,
3-2. That's a challenging situation, and great for San Jose to get the win in that. But you know, that doesn't look great for Seattle.
No, it does not, and I think that they look like it's not just we're used to Sounders having a poor start to the season, but they look like they're missing an ingredient or two from their usual selves. I fully expect that Seattle will climb up the table and probably make it into the playoffs just fine. Battling for at top of the table and it being like another LAFC Seattle grudge match down the line. Yeah, I don't know that I quite see that yet. Now, if anybody can prove us wrong and turn things around, it's certainly Brian Schmetzer. We're just talking about current state. Seattle, I'm sure, is not done, but I definitely think that Seattle always is the best when all of the pieces are working together, and that always does seem to take a little bit of time to gel, but in the midfield in particular, it just feels like it's not quite firing on all cylinders, and they are maybe missing a piece or two, which they may well add yet.
Some news and notes that I had. I think the number one most important, you know, story that had loomed over it and was a part of our you know, show opening line was the referees have reached an agreement reached a new CBA with the league, and it looks pretty good. The salaries are up in all of their categories,
yeah.
Whether it's referee, assistant referee, VAR, or AVAR. The way they have it structured makes it looks like it looks like there's some changes on changes in match fees and other like expense based stuff. So that's great. We love to see that. It was a really frustrating situation, I think, for everyone. I don't even necessarily like. I don't even necessarily like have. Well, I have judgment when people cross the picket line and when referees cross the picket line, but I know that everybody in this situation was trying to do their best. Some of these names. I bet you'd never be so happy to see Alan Chapman in your life.
Yeah. I mean, it's Alan Chapman aside. I mean, it is great to see the deal done. And
oh, was Alan Chapman? Sorry, I thought Alan Chapman is a current referee. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know.
Did I just go for a referee name? And
I'm sure he's still kicking around. But
yes.
Key thing here is I'm glad a deal got done. I agree. I mean, it's certainly notable that, you know, when the referees are locked out, things continue on as normal. But obviously with players, it's a different situation. So I think that alone shows the decreased position of power that this referees union is in. And I'm glad that this thing did not get dragged on forever and ever. It seems like both sides are happy enough. It's a fairly long-term deal. I don't think unions sign long-term deals unless they feel like it's in their best interest and they're actually getting something out of it. So that says to me that they feel like they are, and it is at least a fair deal.
And I had said this before, but the with the financial situation improving in MLS because of the Apple deal and all these players coming in, the referees deserve their equal share of that, of the value they're helping create. And with better players, the importance of the ref, the importance of the referee to player safety, not better players, but more valuable players. With teams making the level of investments that they are, having qualified, experienced officials becomes even more important.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that it seemed kind of dicey there on how that was going to go or how long the league was going to try and drag this out. So I'm glad that someone there found it in them to recognize that value.
Labor costs money.
That's right.
A few other things that have happened since the beginning of the season. One that I was pretty surprised by is that we finally learned about the fate of Russell Tybert, long-term Whitecaps captain, and it is that he now retired and has hung up the boots to join the Whitecaps front office.
Well, I know that's a challenging... That is a scenario where you want to you want the best for him. He means a lot to the club. He was one of the people that was still one of the few people that was around in any way that had seen the USL era jersey. But there was also the disconnect of the fact that he was the club captain and the fact that he wasn't starting.
Yeah.
And I want whatever for him that he would have wanted, whether he would have wanted to, you know, there were Campiel teams that were interested in him, or Campiel fans that were interested in him at least. I had seen his name attached with signing rumors in other leagues. But he ends his career as a one club man, and he gave a lot to the club, and I really appreciated in his statement where he said, you know, we were in such a bad situation, which I don't think is just like, we know it's not just a situation in terms of like points and wins and ties and stuff. There were some days where it kind of felt hard to understand why this team needed to exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he said in his statement that he wanted to, he didn't want to retire until the club was in a good spot, and they are in a better spot, and hopefully through work and trying to become a better place and a more for everybody, and he will be able. My understanding is that he was a good presence, you know, off the pitch for that, and I think that he will continue to be that in the front office.
Absolutely. He was certainly a warrior through the good and the bad times, and Lord knows there was enough bad times. And I know he was a much maligned player among certain Whitecaps fan circles, and it always bothered me. I mean, certainly I think some of the downsides to his playing style were certainly on display for everyone to see, but in terms of his longevity and what he gave to the club, I mean, that guy went out and ran until his tank was empty every single game.
That's right.
Whether he was instrumental or forgettable, he ran like it was a final. And I don't think anybody can ever accuse Russell Tybert of not trying or caring enough about the Whitecaps, because there's a lot of seasons he was about the only one doing either of those things. So it's nice to see him recognized in this way and continue on with the club. And I think it also says a lot that for a player who probably could have extended his playing career longer, not every player chooses that. And some are looking for the next step in a transition into something else that is just different for them. And so I also think that takes a certain amount of courage and to just forge your own path and go, you know what, I am ready for something different, even if I could go play in another league or for another team for a few more seasons. I'm actually ready to do something different.
And it always seemed to me through, you know, his interviews and the way people would talk about him that he was a person of strong mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a huge if I think about, you know, our replacement captain in Ryan Gauld, I think in terms of personality and just mindset towards the game, very similar players, a similar level of just, I'm not going to stand here and make excuses. I'm going to get on the pitch and do what I can and try to help the team around me. I'm not going to shit talk other players. I'm just going to get on with it and lead by example. And I don't think that is by mistake. I think Tybert and his personality are something that have left a huge mark on the team and just the overall character of the club.
One Canada WNT thing I want to mention is that the best game I have seen this season is also the worst game that I have seen this season. And it was the W Gold Cup semifinal against the United States. We talked about it a little bit as a tournament that was defining itself, but it had some fun games to it. And leading up to that match, I tweeted, this is where you're going to this is where you're going to learn all the petty bullshit that people are talking about during the Olympics. And boy, did that happen. Because they played in San Jose. They played at a university stadium in San Jose. And the pitch was trash. Was just simply like the first Canada goal. The first Canada goal came when somebody, I think Buchanan, did a back pass and it just sat. Just sat in the penalty area. There were, you know, injury concerns. It was just a match as it was happening that it was just like, how can this even be, like, every play, whether or not it was like a good play or not, was like, how is it even happening?
Yeah.
The fact that Canada tie, and then they go into a penalty shootout where Alyssa Nair saves almost everything and then scores. It's like, well, what the fuck can you do in that case? three penalty saves and a goal scored. What the, there's That's nothing.
Not a bad day at the office.
Not a bad day at the office. So, that was, a happening.
Yeah.
And certainly another, a great start to a new, you know, generation and a new set of petty grudges that will animate the both of these teams through the next cycle.
Love it.
Including the Olympics.
Until the next petty grudges are forged, where could we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter and Blue Sky, or Team Bates, I think, at bluesky.social or .bsky.social or whatever that was. Team Batesy, www.team-bates.com, and wherever my name pops up next, I guess. Just Google it.
That's a new one. Just Google it.
Where can we find you online?
Well, you can also just fucking Google it. No, you can find me online on Instagram at thatsomls. And of course, thatsomls.com, on Apple Podcasts, on all the other podcast platforms, whatever your favorite one is. Just find us, rate, review, and subscribe. That helps us tremendously. And until next time, don't get sent off.
Don't get sent off.